60 Minutes, coming up next.
You know, at PodcastOne.com, we love hearing from you, so keep on sending those tweets and comments, because we read every one of them. Your opinion is important. That's why we don't want you to miss the chance to take our listener survey at PodcastOne.com. You see, your responses will help us make this show the very best it can be. It's not a lot of effort, because it'll only take you about 3 minutes, and you'll get the instant gratification that comes with knowing that you helped us get better. So do it now. Take the survey at PodcastOne.com. That's PodcastOne.com. And don't forget, keep those tweets and comments coming.
In my judgment, his actions were beyond comprehension. And I'm somebody who's now been in the game over 50 years.
Never seen anything like it?
I hadn't. No.
The commissioner of baseball is talking about Alex Rodriguez, the Yankee All-Star who's been suspended for all of next season. At the center of baseball's unprecedented investigation is the key witness, Tony Bosch, who ran a secret doping clinic and speaks tonight for the first time.
Alex is scared of needles. So at times he would ask me to inject.
You've injected him?
Yes.
Personally?
Personally.
But baseball's investigation of A-Rod goes much further, and you'll hear details of that tonight.
A 7.1 earthquake hit the San Francisco-Oakland area on
October 17, 1989.
When we first did this story, there were only six people known to have this remarkable memory ability in the world. There are now close to 60, including Jake.
I just have that type of memory that can remember everything.
A 10-year-old.
What happened in school on January
30th, 2013? I'm pretty sure... Oh, wait. That's a trick question. We didn't have school that day.
I'm Steve Croft.
I'm Leslie Stahl.
I'm Morley Safer.
I'm Bob Simon.
I'm Scott Pelley. Those stories tonight on 60 Minutes. Yesterday, Alex Rodriguez, considered one of the best baseball players of all time, was hit with the longest doping suspension in history. After a contentious private hearing, Major League Baseball's arbitration judge took the Yankee third baseman out of the game all of next season. This despite the fact that there is no positive drug test for Rodriguez. After the decision, Rodriguez repeated that he has never taken performance-enhancing drugs in the years that he's played for New York. Tonight, you are going to hear details of the evidence for the first time, much of it from Anthony Bosch, who ran a secret doping practice for pro athletes. It was last summer, after Bosch was exposed, that Rodriguez and 13 others, all Bosch's clients, were suspended. All accepted their penalties, except Rodriguez, who appealed. In Rodriguez's appeal hearing, Tony Bosch testified for 5 days behind closed doors. Tonight, he speaks publicly for the first time.
Once Alex Rodriguez was fully into your protocol, what were the various banned substances that he was taking?
Testosterone, insulin growth factor, one, human growth hormone, and some different forms of peptides.
All of them banned?
All of them banned.
And he knew that?
Yes, he did. He
knew and that. You knew that?
And I knew that.
Was Rodriguez injecting himself with these substances?
Alex is scared of needles. So at times he would ask me to inject.
You've injected him?
Yes.
Personally?
Personally.
Tony Bosch told us Alex Rodriguez became his client in 2010. Bosch says he supplied pro athletes with banned drugs almost 10 years, a corrupt sideline to his anti-aging clinic called Biogenesis, which was once in this Florida office building. On August 4th, 2010, Rodriguez hit his 600th home run in his quest to become the greatest home run hitter of all time. Tony Bosch told us it was 5 days before this moment that he was summoned to a Florida hotel to meet Rodriguez for the first time.
The first words out of his mouth were, you know, what did Manny Ramirez take in 2008 and 2009? What were you given? What were you given Manny Ramirez?
Out towards right center field for Manny Ramirez.
Bosch says Manny Ramirez came to him at the age of 35, and the next season he nearly doubled his home runs. Ramirez retired in 2011 after testing positive for doping. Bosch says that Rodriguez wanted in on the secret.
Alex cared. Alex wanted to know. He would study the product. He would study the substance. He would study the dosages. Because he wanted to achieve all his human performance, or in this case, sports performance, objective. And the most important one was the 800 home run club.
The 800 home run club.
Which was only going to have one member, Alex Rodriguez.
Bosch told us to tailor a doping program for Rodriguez, he needed to know how long various drugs stayed in Rodriguez's body. He says doses and timing were critical, so Rodriguez would not test positive after a game. Bosch says he often drew Rodriguez's blood at specific times to see how quickly the drugs dissipated. He remembers one night a blood test was supposed to be done precisely at 8 o'clock, but Rodriguez was in a Miami nightclub.
So we ended up drawing the blood in the bathroom of this one restaurant slash bar slash club in the bathroom stall at 8 p.m.
With the crowd there.
With the crowd right
People
there.
People coming in and out of the men's room, I take it, and you're in a stall with Alex Rodriguez drawing his blood.
Yes. As crazy as that sounds.
What were you thinking?
I'm not getting paid enough.
Bosch told us he was getting paid $12,000 a month in cash. In return, Bosch prepared this elaborate drug schedule for Rodriguez. Bosch says that his records show the days and times of injections, plus when to use skin creams and oral medications. Six substances on this list are banned. One is testosterone troches or lozenges. Bosch also calls them gummies, which he says were taken in combination with growth hormone and all the rest.
He would put one of these troches in his mouth probably about 10, 15 minutes before game time, or as soon as he went into the field. A player could take it right before game time, and by the time they get back into the locker room after the game, and there was any possibility of testing, they would test negative. They would test clean.
If you were telling Alex Rodriguez to take these gummies a few minutes before the game, he's taking these in the locker room or the dugout. That's quite an image.
Quite an image. They're so small that you could literally, while sitting in the dugout, take it, put it in your mouth, and people could think it's either some flower seeds or a piece of candy or a piece of gum, for that matter.
And how would that help if he took it just a few minutes before a game?
Well, now all of a sudden, his levels of testosterone are higher. It gives him a little bit. It gives him more energy. It gives him more strength. It gives him more focus. And in combination with the growth hormone, that combination would make playing the game of baseball a lot easier.
You know, a lot of people are watching this interview right now saying, how could he? How could you? Right. What's the answer to that question?
I did it because I had a responsibility. I felt I had a responsibility to do it, to let them know that if they're going to take something like this, do it the right way.
You might have said to these players when they came to you, look, don't do any of this stuff. It breaks the rules of baseball. Don't do this. Did you ever say that?
No, I never said that. My approach to all this, and I'll stand by it now and I'll stand by it forever, was you're going to do this. Let me show you how to do this. Let me educate you. And let's do it the right way. And sure, let's not get caught while we're doing this.
Bosch's education in doping is self-taught. He studied at a medical school in Belize, but he has never had a license to practice. He grew up in Miami, and to us, he seemed like a troubled guy, heavy drinker, heavy smoker, dealing in prescription drugs. We found no criminal record other than traffic violations and a citation for practicing medicine without a license, for which he was fined $5,000.
A lot of people are going to say if you hadn't been caught, you'd still be doing it.
I would have to say yes, but that's not what happened. I got caught. So I did what was the right thing to do. So yes, would I be doing it if I didn't get caught? I'd still be doing it. I'm here to say the truth, so that is the truth.
One thing is certainly true. Bosch has lied about this case. He's had it both ways. This is what he said after the scandal broke.
No comment. I'm a nutritionist. I don't know anything about performance-enhancing drugs.
Bosch says the story he tells today is backed up by hundreds of text messages that he says he exchanged with Rodriguez. We have more than 500 of them. They are BlackBerry BBM messages. Major League Baseball says the PIN number attached to the messages matches a BlackBerry owned by Rodriguez. Bosch says those testosterone lozenges were taken both before and during a game. This question came from the device linked to Rodriguez. Gummy at 10:45 a.m., game at 1 p.m. Bosch responded, 10:30 a.m.
What difference does 15 minutes make?
All the difference in the world. Every difference in the world. Every minute counts.
At what point in a game was too late to take a trochee? What inning?
In Alex's case, probably right after the first inning, second inning.
Any later than that, and there was a chance the testosterone would turn up in the league's random post-game urine tests. Bosch says that Rodriguez was tested by baseball more than a dozen times. All turned out negative. He told us he'd given Rodriguez tips on ways to beat that test.
You want to start the test and then introduce the urine cup into the stream, and what you want to capture is the middle of the stream, not the beginning or not the end of the stream. That was extremely important because most of the metabolites are either in the beginning of the stream or at the end of the stream.
It's that precise.
It's that precise.
During this 2012 game, Rodriguez drove in three runs.
A-Rod hits a deep one to center.
And smashed a 418-foot double.
Alex Rodriguez, in his hometown of Miami, has given the Yankees a 4-2 lead.
The next morning, a message from the Rodriguez BlackBerry read, "Really good, explosive." Bosch replied, "Go with same protocol." What we didn't find in the messages is the name of any performance-enhancing drug. Rodriguez's lawyer has said that's because they were talking about nutrition. But Bosch says it's because they used code words. He says the word cohete, misspelled in the message, is Spanish for rocket, and that meant injectable drugs, according to Bosch. Night cream was loaded with testosterone. In 2012, a message attributed to Rodriguez's BlackBerry said, "Feel good. Big day tomorrow. What do you have?" Bosch texted back these instructions.
One click of night cream at night, one cohote at night, one click of night cream in the morning, one gummy in the a.m., four clicks of day cream before leaving the field, one cohote in a.m., pink cream before the game, any oral pills in the a.m. Alex had a great game. He doubled, he scored twice. What did his performance tell you about what you had told him to take?
That we had the right protocol.
I wonder why he trusted you so much.
I was very good at what I did. I had a track record. I have been doing this for many years. If you had the knowledge that I had, the experience that I had, and then you know the truth about the testing and the flaws, it was almost a cakewalk, actually.
A cakewalk?
Yeah.
To beat the system.
To beat the system.
To cheat.
To cheat.
But did you ever think about the integrity of the game?
No, I never did. I didn't know. I love the game of baseball.
How can you love the game of baseball and do this to the game?
Because unfortunately, this is part of baseball. This is part of baseball. When you ask these guys to play 100 plus games back to back, jump on a plane, get off a plane, all these road trips, their bodies break down. This has always been part of the game. Always been part of the game. And so their nutrition is extremely important.
But come on, Tony. We're not talking about nutrition and massage therapy and all those sorts of things. We're talking about drugs that are banned, that are illegal in the sport. They knew what they were doing. You knew what you were doing. And it cuts to the heart of fair play.
What is fair play? Let me ask you that question. How about this? Follow me in thought. Here I am. I'm Alex. And I'm at the plate. And I know that the guy that's throwing the 95-mile-per-hour pitch is on sports performance-enhancing drugs. The guy who's going to catch the ball is on a program. The guy that I have to tag at third from a throw from center field, when he's sliding, he's on it. Fair play? Fair play. If everybody's on it, wouldn't that be fair play?
Of course, not everybody is on it, and those who play clean are probably outraged right about now by that sweeping indictment Bosch made in our interview. Baseball Commissioner Bud Selig told us that the league's unprecedented investigation was aimed at protecting those clean players. When we come back, Tony Bosch tells us he had reason to believe he would be killed if he gave up Alex Rodriguez. After losing his appeal yesterday, Alex Rodriguez called the evidence against him false and unreliable. Referring to Tony Bosch, he said that the arbitration panel relied on the hearsay testimony of a criminal. This scandal first broke in 2013 when an unhappy business partner of Bosch stole client records from Bosch's clinic and shared them with a newspaper, the Miami New Times. What came next was a contest between Major League Baseball and baseball's richest player. The league's investigation was more FBI than MLB. But Baseball Commissioner Bud Selig told us this was a battle to save the game, and he was determined not to lose to Rodriguez.
In my judgment, his actions were beyond comprehension. And I'm somebody who's now been in the game over 50 years.
Never seen anything like it?
I hadn't. No.
And so you decided to make an example of him?
I wouldn't call an example. I think the penalty fit what I saw was the evidence.
What was it about the Alex Rodriguez case that was an outlier for you?
Scott, as I looked at everything, on all the players, and then I got to Alex Rodriguez. You put all the drug things on one side, and then all the things that he did impede our investigation and really do things that I had never seen any other player do, I think 211 games was a very fair penalty.
In the early days after the clinic records were published, Tony Bosch found himself on the same side as Rodriguez, denying all. But Bosch told us Rodriguez wanted insurance that his secrets would be kept. Bosch says that associates of Rodriguez met him at this apartment building and asked him to sign an affidavit which said he had never supplied performance-enhancing drugs to Rodriguez. This made Bosch nervous. He wanted a lawyer, and he refused to sign. Then, a couple of days later, he says Rodriguez's associates met him at this restaurant.
One of his associates said, well, I think you should leave town. We're going to get you a plane ticket to Colombia. We want you to stay there until this blows over. We're going to pay you, I forgot what the number was, $25,000 or $20,000 a month, and then when you come back, we'll give you another $150,000.
Rodriguez's people told you to go to Colombia.
Colombia.
And they'd take care of you there.
And they'd take care of me there.
Bosch says he was suspicious and turned down the offer.
Did you believe that Alex knew about this offer, knew about this meeting?
Nothing happens without Alex's approval. I used to be in that inner circle. And nothing happens without him approving.
We wanted to ask Rodriguez about that charge and all of the allegations, but he declined an interview. His attorney, Joe Tacopina, described the allegations as unbelievable.
Are you saying that Alex Rodriguez was not party to or aware of any offers to bribe Bosch or threaten him?
Absolutely not. He didn't bribe anyone. There was no allegation that he bribed anyone. And the notion that Bosch is now coming on a television interview without the benefit of cross-examination or an oath is laughable.
Commissioner Selig told us that the thing for him that was beyond the pale was what he describes as all of the efforts to obstruct Major League Baseball's investigation.
Scott, it's unbelievable. And when you say that, I look and I just, I'm in disbelief when I hear that, because it's almost the exact opposite. Major League Baseball went on an effort and a campaign to obstruct justice by forcing and compelling witnesses, threatening witnesses, and they have the gall to accuse Alex Rodriguez of obstructing the investigation. I mean, it's laughable.
Tony Bosch told us after he turned down the Columbia offer, things got sinister. He says his ex-girlfriend received a text message in Spanish saying Bosch would not live to see the end of the year. His world was shrinking, but he didn't know the half of it. At the Manhattan headquarters of Major League Baseball, Rob Manfred had his sights on Bosch. A lawyer by training, Manfred runs Major League Baseball as the chief operating officer. Commissioner Selig told him to do what he had to do to get to the bottom of the scandal. Manfred hired the former director of the United States Secret Service and a number of retired FBI agents, more than 30 investigators in all. In the underworld of Miami, word got around, and a call came to Major League Baseball. Turned out, there were more documents from Bosch's Biogenesis clinic.
We got a call from a gentleman who identified himself only as Bobby and said he had the Biogenesis documents and offered to make an agreement with us to get those documents.
Make an agreement. He offered to sell them to you.
That's correct. That's correct.
And you offered to buy them.
He offered to sell them, and we bought them.
How much?
$100,000 originally, and then there was a second purchase for $25,000.
But when you pay $125,000 to a guy who only identifies himself as Bobby, doesn't that immediately call into question the authenticity of the documents? He's going to do anything he has to do to collect your $125,000.
We were eyes wide open with respect to the questions that would surround these documents in terms of authenticating them in any legal proceeding, making sure they hadn't been doctored.
To authenticate the documents, Manfred needed the cooperation of Tony Bosch.
Your team filed suit against Tony Bosch.
That's correct.
To put pressure on him.
Yes, we'd sued him, we'd sued his brother, yes.
You were caught in a vice.
Yes.
What were you thinking in that moment?
I was in a dark place. It was, I had no idea what I was going to do next. And I relied on the advice of one of my lawyers.
And that advice was what?
Let's go to Major League Baseball. Let's align ourselves with somebody as powerful as Alex.
Your telephone rings and it's Tony Bosch's lawyer, finally.
Right.
What did he want?
He wanted a direct meeting with me.
On May 9th, 2013, Rob Manfred and the MLB's chief counsel, Dan Halen, met Bosch at this Miami restaurant.
He was fidgety, nervous, uncomfortable.
What did he want?
His principal concern from the very beginning was his personal safety.
What did he tell you?
He told us that there had been threats on his life, We knew from our own investigation, and this was a great source of concern to us, that there were individuals in this web of people that surrounded Biogenesis that had criminal records and that by reputation were dangerous.
Were these associates of the baseball players?
Some of them were associates of baseball players, which was an issue of great concern to us. Some of them were associates of Alex Rodriguez.
Are you saying that Alex Rodriguez and or his associates were involved in threatening to kill Tony Bosch?
The individual that was of greatest concern to Mr. Bosch was a known associate of Mr. Rodriguez.
Do you think Rodriguez knew about the threats to Bosch's life?
I don't know what Mr. Rodriguez knew. I know that the individual involved has been an associate of Mr. Rodriguez's for some time.
The deal was done right there. Bosch would testify, and in return, baseball would pay for his security, pay his legal fees, drop its lawsuit, and defend him against any other legal claims. Bosch began telling baseball about the effort to obstruct its investigation, including this bank statement for an unsolicited wire transfer of just under $50,000 to Bosch's lawyer from A-Rod Corporation, Rodriguez's private company. The money came before Bosch began to cooperate with baseball. Bosch's lawyer returned it.
You think that's a bribe?
I do.
Rodriguez's appeal of his suspension was heard by a three-member arbitration panel made up of Rob Manfred, David Prouty of the Players Union, and Frederick Horowitz, an independent arbitrator. During the hearing, Rodriguez's lawyer, Joe Tacopina, challenged Bosch's testimony.
Aside from all his credibility issues, his past lies, the fact that he has all the motive in the world to try and help Major League Baseball because it will help him get out of a massive criminal prosecution, as they've promised to do, just look to the science. Science will defy Tony Bosch. It's Tony Bosch's word, uncorroborated by anything, and, of course, science.
Tacopina says the science would show that if Bosch was doping Rodriguez, Rodriguez never could have passed a dozen drug tests. Tacopina says that Bosch was essentially paid to be a witness when baseball agreed to cover his security and legal fees.
Alex Rodriguez has filed a suit against Major League Baseball that claims that you paid him essentially $5 million.
There's absolutely no basis for that claim. It's just absolutely untrue.
You say you can't pay him to be a witness, but you're paying for his security guards, you're paying for his lawyers, and you're dropping your lawsuit. Haven't you given him every incentive to tell you what you want to hear? Every incentive for him to lie?
I think that Mr. Bosch's credibility on these issues, whatever his motivations, whatever we did for him, was established by his willingness to come in, raise his right hand, testify, and by the fact that he had all sorts of evidence that supported everything that he said.
He's told both stories, that he had nothing to do with this and he had everything to do with this. How is that credible evidence?
The credibility of any witness is determined by a trier fact by looking the individual in the eye, listening to the story he tells, and then lining it up with the other evidence. And frankly, nobody came in and contradicted what Mr. Bosch said. There was no witness that ever came in the case and said Tony Bosch isn't telling the truth.
Rodriguez never made it to the end of the arbitration hearing. When the arbitration panel turned down his request to call Commissioner Selig as a witness, Rodriguez stormed out with a parting comment to Rob Manfred.
He said to me, "Rob, this is BS and you know it."
A few hours later, Rodriguez showed up on CBS's New York sports radio station, WFAN.
Were you guilty of any of these charges?
No, and I should have
said did you do anything wrong?
No.
Did you do any PEDs?
No.
Did you obstruct just anybody, any witnesses? Did you do anything that they accuse you of
no.
doing?
No.
Nothing?
Nothing.
So you're guilty in your mind of nothing?
I feel like I should be there opening day.
Alex Rodriguez has called all of this a witch hunt.
I think the most important point to remember is that for the first time in the history of the joint drug agreement, the player accused of wrongdoing did not take the stand in his own defense. So whatever Mr. Rodriguez has said publicly, the fact of the matter is the evidence in the case contains no denial from Mr. Rodriguez.
But Rodriguez continues his public denials. He says he will pursue this case in federal court. His suspension would cost him about $25 million from his Yankees contract. A federal grand jury in Florida is meeting to determine whether anyone should be charged with a crime. And Bud Selig has announced his retirement as commissioner of baseball. Part of his legacy is the establishment of the toughest anti-doping rules in all of American pro sports.
You may or may not recall that a few years back, we brought you a story about a handful of people with memories that are almost unimaginable. Name virtually any date in their lives, and they can tell you what they were doing that day, the day of the week, sometimes even the weather, all within seconds. It's a kind of memory that's brand new to science, literally unheard of just a decade ago. After our story aired, the scientists studying this phenomenon were flooded with calls and emails. We were so intrigued, we decided to follow the research to see what further study might reveal about these remarkable memories and what it may mean for the rest of us. They now have many more subjects, including a 10-year-old boy.
Okay, do it.
But first, meet or refresh your memory of our original memory wizards.
A 7.1 earthquake hit the San Francisco-Oakland area on
October 17, 1989.
I remember watching the game of the World Series.
And when were the Oscars held? In 1999.
In 1999. Sunday, March 21st.
Yes.
They remember what they did.
I went to a fabulous Oscar party that day.
What they care about.
When was the last time the Redskins beat the Steelers?
In 91. November 17th, 1991.
Sometimes even the shoes they wore.
These I wore on April the 21st of this year, so that was a Tuesday. Oh, these shoes I got a long time ago.
It's the way most of us remember yesterday.
The first time I wore them and I got them was on April the 9th, so that was a Friday of 1982.
This is a detective story.
The scientist who first identified this condition and has been studying it ever since is Dr. James McGaw at the University of California, Irvine. An eye condition requires him to wear a clouded lens.
We are pretending that we are Sherlock Holmes. We've arrived on the scene of a crime or something that's unusual. All of a sudden, we have a new phenomenon of memory, and we're trying to figure out how it is that this happened.
When we did our first story, only six people in the world had been identified with this ability, one of them by chance, the actress Mary Lou Henner. But that number changed quickly.
Okay, quiz. What's the date that that story first aired?
December 19th, 2010.
What day of the week was it?
Sunday.
Joey DeGrandis, Bill Brown, Tracy Fersan, and Jared Hurd are among the 50 new subjects.
All right. What happened on June 25th, 2009?
Michael Jackson
and Farrah Fawcett died, too.
Farrah Fawcett that morning.
That's right.
They both died the same day.
And when they think about those days, they actually relive them.
It's not just a question of numbers, dates, and times. It's emotion. And so, you know, when we wake up on that certain day of the year, it's kind of like how everybody wakes up feeling on 9/11.
Do you even know that when I think of something 5 years ago, I don't have much emotion attached to it?
I can't even relate to that.
Yeah.
I don't even understand that.
So, Joe, how old were you when you first realized that you could do this?
I was about 10 years old. It was the fall of 94.
It was a Tuesday.
How's it going so far? Are you tricking people?
We had a fourth grade magic show at the very end of the year. It was Thursday, June 1st of 95. And I remember, like, the week before, you know, trying to think of what am I going to do? I'm not a magician. I don't know what I'm going to do for this magic show. My mom said to me, why don't you do your date thing? You know, just blow some calendars up behind you, you know, stand with your back facing the calendars, and when people come by, ask them to pick a date. And that's what I did.
Okay, how about if we pick January 8th, 1993?
Friday.
How about December 15th, 1993? How about February 9th, 1994.
Wednesday again.
Correct.
Until now, Joey's videotape was the closest the researchers had come to seeing this ability in a child. Enter Jake Hausler, age 10.
What day of the week was Halloween 2011?
Monday. That one I didn't even have to think about.
New Year's Day 2010.
Friday.
Friday.
I remember that because I was up all night at the Blues game.
That's when Jake was 6. He lives in St. Louis, loves sports, and is, in most respects, a typical 10-year-old.
What happened, related to school, on January 30th, 2013?
That day, I'm pretty sure... Oh, wait. That's a trick question. We didn't have school that day. There was a huge lightning storm that last night. I'm like, hey, we didn't have school that day.
How's your day, Jake?
Jake's parents, Sari and Eric Hausler, and his older brother, Ben, say they knew something was up with Jake's memory when he was only 3 and he had memorized the inspection stickers on the neighbor's cars. Then he started with the dates.
We'd be driving in the car and we'd be talking about a past event and he would say, oh, that was a Tuesday.
And there was the time the family dog threw up in her crate.
He says to me, well, Mom, tomorrow would be a year since the last time she threw up in her crate.
I remember her first time was Thursday, May 10th, 2012.
I mean, he has a lot of things stuck in his head.
There's a lot in there.
What did you think was going on?
We didn't know.
Not really sure.
They heard about Dr. McGaw's research from our first story and brought Jake out to Irvine for testing. Dr. McGaw says seeing this ability in a child firsthand is significant.
What did you have for breakfast January 1st, 2013?
It was actually pancakes.
My gosh.
We wondered if seeing it this early proves it's innate. Well, take a look at this.
May 27th, 2012. Do you know what day of the week that was?
That was a Sunday.
You're right.
There is exactly one child in the world other than Jake who's been identified so far with this ability, 11-year-old Tyler Hickenbottom. And in a fortuitous coincidence, Tyler happens to be an identical twin. He and his brother Chad share the same genes.
I think I might have worn an orange shirt.
But surprisingly not the same memory.
No, that was in 2012 when he had to wear the neon shirt.
Dr. McGaw and his team haven't scanned Chad and Tyler's brains yet to see what secrets they might hold. But they have put Jake into an MRI scanner, as well as many of the adults. The latest findings show a more active pathway between the front and back of the brain.
I would say that the reason that they can do that in part might be because the different parts of the brain have greater access to each other. And so that is exciting, and we're going to have to explore that in more detail.
In the meantime, McGaw and his team have made some surprising new discoveries in their low-tech testing. They showed the memory wizards a short film about a dinner party and later gave them a memory test.
How many coffee mugs were on the kitchen table in the opening scene?
I don't know.
None?
I'm going to guess 4.
The answer is 1.
The surprising thing is they are no better than the rest of us in memory of that film. Now, their explanation for this is that they didn't live that. In other words, they're just watching it. That was not their life.
But even when it comes to their own lives, there have been some unexpected findings. In a new test, McGaw's team asked the wizards, as well as non-wizards like me, to go back day by day to see how much we remember.
So yesterday I went to the gym.
For breakfast, I had pineapple and some papaya.
I remember waking up at 9:22, actually.
I remember exactly what I had for lunch. I remember, I could tell you in rich detail.
In memory of what happened yesterday, we are as good as they are. That surprised me.
Yeah.
But we have pretty good memories of yesterday. A couple days later, we're almost as good as they are.
And I remember Sunday quite well.
And then at 10 o'clock, I had a banana.
I really had to go to the bathroom, so we had to stop like 4
But their rate of forgetting is very small, and ours is large. So by the time we get to a week, we're very different in our memories. And we get to a month, and they are still almost as good as they were a week afterwards, and we've gone to almost 0. They are not exceptional learners. They are very poor forgetters.
I was definitely a strong forgetter. I couldn't remember anything when I got to the end of the previous week.
Thursday and Friday. Wow.
But is it really that we forget? Watch what happened after my test when my 60 Minutes colleagues reminded me that the Thursday and Friday I'd been struggling with, we had been together shooting a story.
Thursday and Friday?
When I was prompted, then I remembered in great detail. I just couldn't bring it up.
Well, you have arrived at what we think is the most critical issue in this research. Do they have in their brains retrieval mechanisms for memory that we don't have? Now, if that's the case, that would suggest the possibility that we have all those memories. We're just like them. We don't have the hooks to get the memories out. Wouldn't that be interesting? If that were the case, the possibility would be that we could do something which would make those memories come out better. Wouldn't that be exciting?
But that raises an important question. Would we really want to remember it all?
What is the hardest part of having this kind of memory?
The worst thing is that I can remember every bad thing that happened to me.
You remember every bad thing?
I remember this from The Lion King. Leave the past behind.
You hear that?
But
all
I can't
time.
Do that.
But do you think you have to learn how to make it fade?
It's probably going to be hard
to let it go.
Because I can't forget it.
We were in New Jersey this summer on vacation, and he woke up one day and he said, this was a really bad day last year because you yelled at me.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, as a father, you go, God, geez, honey, I don't even remember. What did I say?
He said it's a bad day.
Breaks your heart.
But I think for us, time heals, or at least lessens it. And I feel that for them, it probably doesn't.
I can't let it fade because I just have that type of memory that can remember everything.
We thought it might help Jake to meet some other people with that type of memory.
Look at you. Oh, my gosh, are you darling?
So we brought him together with Louise Owen, Bob Petrella, and Mary Lou Henner. To break the ice, Bob asked Jake about sports.
So October 27th, 2011.
October 27th.
Think about it. If you're a Cardinal fan.
Game six. That's get it. Get it off, baby. Get it off, yeah. Baby.
Who hit the key hit? Remember?
Dave Freese.
That's it? Yeah.
Center field.
All right. He's validated.
Okay.
It was like a super memory summit.
Is it as if you're living it again as opposed to, for me, kind of a two-dimensional memory?
For me, it is. I mean, you say the date, and I'm there as though it happened moments ago rather than 28 years ago.
And that is both emotionally and smelling and touching.
It really feels like time travel. Like
it's right there.
Yeah. Yeah. You can almost feel the clothes
yes.
you were wearing.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You know, they can do that. Just all yeah.
Do you think it's sad that the rest of us lose so much memory of our own lives? Feel sorry for us.
I do.
You do?
I do.
Louise said she feels her memory is a gift, and she had some encouragement for the newest member of the memory club.
I think it's like having a superpower. And, you know, you can be normal. You can be
superior.
You can be Clark Kent. You can sort of blend in with everybody else. But then when you really need to fly, you can totally fly, and it's awesome.
On balance, taking your life, are you glad you have this memory or you wish you didn't have this memory?
I'm glad.
You're glad, on balance.
Yeah.
I'm Scott Pelley. We'll be back next week with another edition of 60 Minutes. We'll have more on the Alex Rodriguez investigation tomorrow on CBS This Morning and on the CBS Evening News.